150 days into the Israeli genocide of Palestinians in Gaza, the death toll from the onslaught rises past 30,500. Beirut is hosting an international conference on unity against Israeli aggression. Participants are calling for pressure on the regime to end its genocide of Palestinians in Gaza. Also in the headlines, Israeli forces launch fresh raids in the occupied West Bank, killing another Palestinian and abducting at least 20 others. Well, welcome to the studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is Mias. Thanks for joining us. 150 days into the Israeli onslaught on the Gaza Strip, the regime has carried out more deadly attacks on civilian targets. One of the attacks hit the Nuseirat camp in central Gaza, killing a dozen civilians. The Israeli military once again also opened fire on people seeking aid in Gaza City, killing at least nine and wounding dozens of others. This comes as lack of food and aid has led to a humanitarian crisis in the besieged Gaza Strip. Medical sources have confirmed that malnutrition has taken the lives of at least 16 children so far. Israel began its latest onslaught on Gaza on October 7. The Gaza Health Ministry says the genocide has killed 30,534 Palestinians so far. The UN Children's Fund has warned that many more children in Gaza will die of dehydration and malnutrition unless there is direct intervention to provide assistance. UNICEF's regional director, Adel Khodr, added these tragic deaths are man-made, predictable, and entirely preventable. She said that a lack of nutritious food, clean water, and medical services is a direct consequence of preventing aid supplies to Gaza. She demanded aid agencies be allowed to bring in relief assistance through all possible crossings. Meanwhile, the UN Special Rapporteur on the Right to Food called for sanctions against Israel, saying that this is the only way to reach a ceasefire in Gaza. Michael Fakhri added, famine is looming in Gaza, as Tel Aviv is intentionally starving Palestinians there. Earlier we spoke to our correspondent Muti Abu Musaba in Deir al-Balah, Gaza. He told us that Israel has not stopped its attacks on humanitarian aid trucks in the besieged strip.
Over the last couple of hours, the Israeli warplanes renewed their attacks against the northern part of Gaza Strip. Several residential buildings were destroyed, particularly in the eastern part of Jabalia refugee camp and Beit Lahia town in the far north of Gaza Strip. As a result of these continuous attacks and airstrikes hitting several areas of Gaza Strip, 31 Palestinian civilians were reportedly killed. As a result of the Israeli airstrikes in Rafah over the last night. We are in front of continuous Israeli airstrikes, and according to the UN, that the Palestinian children here in Gaza are dying slowly before the eyes of the whole world. This reflects how catastrophic the humanitarian conditions are, because the people here, particularly the Palestinian children, are living catastrophic humanitarian conditions. They are completely deprived of their basic humanitarian supplies, particularly milk, food, and drinkable water, leaving them suffering amid an unprecedented situation. They are suffering from the dehydration and the malnutrition, which threatens the lives of thousands of the Palestinian children here in Gaza Strip. In the meantime, the European Mediterranean Center for Human Rights actually announced that they have documented dozens of the cases of the Israeli tanks running over the Palestinian dead bodies, particularly in the western part of Khan Yunis city. They have documented dozens of the Palestinian civilians squashed under the chains of the Israeli tanks while they were attacking those residential areas, while they were attacking the tents taking shelter by the Palestinian evacuees in Khan Yunis and elsewhere in Gaza Strip.
The Islamic Resistance in Iraq says it has attacked the Israeli port of Haifa in the occupied territories in support of the Palestinian people in Gaza. The Iraqi Resistance says it targeted a chemical facility in the port with a drone. It added that the operation was carried out in response to Israel's massacre of Palestinian civilians, including women and children, in Gaza. The Islamic Resistance in Iraq has carried out a number of attacks on Israeli targets in recent months. The group has also struck major American military bases in Syria and in Iraq amid anger over the U.S. support for Israel's genocide in Gaza. The Sixth International Conference for Union of Resistance Scholars is underway in the capital, Beirut. Muslim and Christian clerics from across the world are in attendance to discuss concrete steps to support the people of Palestine and the resistance. In an address to the conference, Hezbollah Deputy Secretary General Sheikh Naim Qassem called the Al-Aqsa flood operation against Israel in October as a legitimate move by the Palestinians.
Al-Aqsa storm is a legitimate right of the Palestinians. There is no argument, no debate regarding its legitimacy. They confronted an occupation which continued for 75 years. And this occupation cannot be removed except by resistance. And Al-Aqsa storm is the torch of life which feeds the resistance and contributes in the resistance increasing its presence and achieves victories via the steps it takes. This is a legitimate right. You are aware that were it not for the American support, the daily American support via the air bridge and funding via the weapons and ammunition which comes daily, and it has exceeded 250 planes up until now, and around 300 ships, all carrying ammunition and equipment. Were it not for this, Israel would not have succeeded in continuing for even days in its aggression.
In an address to the same conference, senior Hamas spokesman Osama Hamdan says the resistance will continue its sacrifices until the occupation of Palestine ends.
As the steadfastness and resistance on the ground continues from the resistance fighters and the people, we stress to the Zionists and to their partners, the United States of America, in this aggression, we say to them that what they failed to achieve on the ground, they will not be able to achieve politically. Whatever may be the misleading efforts and the pressures which are being exerted, this resistance will continue to be ready to sacrifice, will continue also to achieve more results until the occupation comes to an end, to be committed to the norms and the principles of its people. Any flexibility we show in the negotiations out of our care for the blood of our people and to put a limit to the grave pains of our people and their sacrifices in the brutal genocidal war. At the same time, we are completely ready to defend our people. And the threats to carry out more massacres in Rafah, this once again proves the nature of this army with this enemy, with this criminal army, which is represents one of the ugliest militaries seen by mankind in history, whereby they announce the massacres and the killing of the civilians as a strategy of war, and they launch attacks on hospitals as if they are bases.
Iran says the Organization of Islamic Cooperation will be tested in its upcoming Jeddah meeting for its commitment to the Palestinian cause. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman says people in the Islamic countries expect their leaders to take immediate and firm decisions to end Israel's brutal attacks on Palestinians. Nasser Kanani welcomed what Islamic countries have done so far for Gaza, but he stressed that Palestinians expect actions that prevent the regime's atrocities. The OIC will hold an emergency foreign ministerial meeting Tuesday to address the ongoing Israeli genocide in Gaza. Iran's foreign minister will also take part in the meeting. Israel carries out another deadly raid in the occupied West Bank as part of the regime's intensified security crackdown, timed with the onslaught on Gaza. Regime forces killed a Palestinian in their latest deadly incursion. The raid targeted the Amari refugee camp in the central West Bank. Regime troopers also abducted 20 Palestinians in Al-Khalil. The Israeli military also blew up an apartment in Nablus as part of the regime's stepped-up campaign to demolish Palestinian structures. Elsewhere in Tulkarm, Israeli bulldozers also destroyed the infrastructure at Nur Shams refugee camp. The regime has intensified its incursions across the West Bank since it began its ongoing genocide in the Gaza Strip on October 7. The raids and settler violence have left more than 400 Palestinians dead. Mona Kandil joined us earlier from Ramallah to give us more details on the latest Israeli incursion into the occupied West Bank.
This is what happened this morning. The Israeli forces raided the refugee camp of Al-Am'ari, South Albiri city, and in order to conduct arrests among Palestinians. During the operation, Israeli forces opened fire at the Palestinians. We are speaking about narrow roads or narrow streets inside the refugee camp. Palestinians left their homes. It was the early hours of Monday. People were preparing themselves to go to their work, or students to go to their schools. So we are speaking about overcrowded area, and people were already in the streets to go to their work and their schools. The Israeli forces opened fire at those Palestinians, killed a Palestinian teen, Omar Mustafa, Omar Abu Shalbak, and wounded a number of Palestinians. Elsewhere in the occupied West Bank, the Israelis had stormed the city of Nablus, and they destroyed the family home of Palestinian martyr Muad al-Masri. Muad al-Masri is a Palestinian who carried out a shooting last April in the Al-Akhwar area, the Jordan Valley, led to the killing of three Israelis. After 1 month in May, the Israeli forces assassinated Muad al-Masri with two of his friends. And today, the Israelis stormed Nablus city and destroyed the family home of Palestinian martyr Muad al-Masri.
The U.S. redesignation of the Ansarullah movement as a terrorist group has had little effect other than worsening the humanitarian situation in Yemen, which is already in a critical condition. Abdul Latif al-Washali has more from Sana'a.
A series of restrictions were imposed on the Yemeni economy following the U.S. redesignation of the Ansarullah movement as a terrorist group earlier this year. This blacklisting has had an impact on the humanitarian situation in the war-torn country, where millions of people are in dire need of aid. Several international companies, including the money transfer company Western Union, have suspended their activities in Yemen, severely affecting the livelihoods of most Yemenis who rely on financial support from relatives abroad. Experts predict that such actions will lead to the creation of a black market for those benefiting from the suspension of money transfers.
The United States of America imposed collective punishment on the Yemeni people. Very important financial channels were stopped, such as Western Union, which is one of the most important money transfer networks in the world, and through it, Yemeni expatriates in American and European countries used to send money to their families in Yemen easily. We have 6 million expatriates outside the country and thousands of Yemeni families depend on them to provide a living. You can imagine what the situation will become after these financial transfers stop. The beneficiaries of this measure are black market workers who exploit these circumstances by deducing a percentage of their remittances and transfer them through illegal channels.
In an effort to deter Yemen's naval operations against vessels linked to the United States, the United Kingdom, and Israel in the Red Sea and Gulf of Aden, the U.S. Department of State blacklisted the Ansarullah movement as a specially designated global terrorist group. However, this designation has primarily affected the humanitarian situation, as members of the Ansarullah movement have no investments abroad.
Observers believe that Washington's recent measures are aimed at inciting the Yemeni people to take to the streets in opposition to the Ansarullah movement as a strategic move to undermine the group's popularity in the country. But that plot does not look like it will succeed, given the widespread support for Ansarullah in Yemen. Abdul Latif al-Washali, Sana'a.
The United States and South Korea have kicked off 10-day annual war games that they insist are defensive in nature. South Korea's defense ministry says the number of troops participating in the exercises is twice as many as last year. They involve air forces from both South Korea and the U.S. South Korean media say the drills could also include American strategic assets. The war games are expected to trigger an angry reaction from the Democratic People's Republic of Korea. The country considers drills in the region with the participation of the U.S. as existential threats and rehearsals for invasion. Pyongyang has responded to the provocations by a record number of missile threats in recent months. Meanwhile, tens of thousands of South Korean doctors gathered near the National Assembly of South Korea to demand the government abandon its plan to increase the number of medical students. Resident doctors in training have walked off the job amid the standoff, leaving hospitals short-staffed and patients scrambling for care. Frank Smith has more from the South Korean capital, Seoul.
South Korean doctors rallied Sunday, threatening to go on strike following the government's decision to increase the quota for incoming medical students from about 3,000 to 5,000. Doctors say the measures will not necessarily alleviate the shortage of physicians in less desirable specialties and locations. Triggered by the government plan, 9,000 resident doctors in training out of 13,000 across the country walked out on February 20th. Patients have been scrambling for care with hospitals understaffed. Polls suggest the South Korean public largely supports the government, and President Yoon Suk-yeol has seen his approval ratings increase since the standoff with doctors emerged. The government has filed criminal complaints against the leaders of the Korea Medical Association who organized this rally. Doctors who failed to comply with the back-to-work order face the suspension of their licenses, fines, and potential jail sentences. Both sides appear to be digging in. Medical schools don't have the capacity to accommodate so many new students, say some administrators. National Assembly elections are scheduled for April 10th. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Pakistan's parliament has re-elected Shehbaz Sharif as the country's prime minister amid nationwide protest demonstrations by supporters of jailed former Premier Imran Khan over allegations of vote rigging. Our correspondent Nasser Kazmi brings us more from the Pakistani capital, Islamabad.
It was the second occasion on which Pakistani lawmakers elected Shehbaz Sharif as the new premier of the country. Shehbaz Sharif assumed office as Pakistan's prime minister for the first time in April 2022, following the dramatic ouster of Pakistan's jailed ex-prime minister Imran Khan from power through a parliamentary no-confidence vote. Sharif, the younger brother of Pakistan's three-time Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif, secured 201 votes in the lower house of the parliament. He emerged victorious over his rival Omar Ayub Khan of the PTI party led by jailed ex-PM Khan, who managed to secure 92 votes. A candidate needs a simple majority of votes in the 336-member house to win the post. The election of the new Pakistani premier was marred by nationwide protests by the supporters of imprisoned Imran Khan against alleged rigging in the recently held elections. Several party workers who were staging protest demonstrations against results manipulation in the recently held elections were arrested. The newly elected premier, Sharif, who is expected to take the oath of the office on Monday, has been congratulated by several neighboring countries, including China, Iran, and Turkey.
As Shehbaz Sharif assumes the role of prime minister for a second time, he is pitted against a multitude of challenges. These include fragile economic and political conditions. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Economic divide.
The most recent report was a shocking one, the steep decline in economic activity in Israel, a GDP drop of around 20%. Double the estimates that Israel's central bank had announced. The headaches for Israel are multifold, since costs are accumulating rapidly while income generation is not keeping up with the cost. How bad a GDP drop is the topic of this edition of Economic Divide. Some of the headlines we'll be looking at. First of all, this drop in GDP for Israel. It shrunk by a fifth, precisely 19.4%. Double the prediction. Does that mean that there are empty coffers? Something we'll be taking a look at. Next, of course, with the GDP drop, there are certain sectors that are impacted. One of the major ones for Israel is the tech sector. Another sector is the private consumption, which has dropped significantly, negative 26.9%. And another one, for example, import goods and services, has dropped by 42.4%. Then the Israeli genocidal war affects. There's been a falling demand, the rising costs, and there are labor shortages.
Israel's economy is in trouble. The regime's onslaught on the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip has cost the regime enormously. According to official figures, Israel's economy shrank by far more than expected in the wake of the onslaught with Hamas in Gaza. Gross domestic product fell by a little over 19% on an annualized basis in the fourth quarter of 2023. It was the single worst quarter for the Israeli economy in terms of GDP per capita since the opening quarter of the COVID pandemic in early 2020. Experts said the data was much worse than had been expected. Exports fell by 18.3% and imports by 42.4%. This was fueled in part by airlines terminating flights and international shipping avoiding the Red Sea. The onslaught had sharply curtailed spending, travel, and investment at the end of last year. Private spending dropped by 26.3%, and there had been a 67.8% slide in investment in fixed assets, especially in residential buildings.
It's time now to take a look at some of the social media posts. First up, Israel's GDP shrank almost 20% in annualized terms in the final quarter of 2023. The drop was caused in part by the call-up of 300,000 reservists. Okay, we got that. That's the topic of the program. This one says Israel's GDP contracted by 19.4% in Q4 on an annualized basis. That's about twice the consensus estimates. That's the key part with this particular entry. Israel Central Bureau of Statistics stated that. Now, this is the important part. Why would Israel not be able to make a projection that's even close? Because twice the consensus estimates is nowhere close to the original estimate. Next, GDP plunged 19.4%, minus 26.9% drop in private consumption. Fixed investment by businesses tumbled by 67.8%. Exports declined by 18.3%. Palestinian resistance and steadfastness hitting Israel's economy so bad, and it won't be able to keep up with that. Pretty much sums up, I guess, in some way, why there was such a huge GDP contraction. Then we go to this website, which was an analysis that said for Israel's economy, it's one more down, another to go, with a question mark. The figures for how much Israel's GDP contracted at the end of 2023 have been shrugged at, as yesterday's news, Hezbollah may not agree. That last point is a pretty important one. Okay, let's bring in our guests for this edition of the program. First up, let's see who we have here. Giorgio Romano. He is the Associate Professor, International Relations and Economics at Federal University, UFABC. Giorgio Romano, welcome to Economic Divide. This steep drop of Israel's GDP is quite a shocker, one-fifth, 19.4%. It's double what was predicted. And if this is the case, and Israel continues down its path, the quick question becomes, how will it be able to sustain this genocidal war? Netanyahu has rejected the most recent truce proposal, for example, and has remained defiant and wants to continue this genocidal war. What do you think?
Well, on the economy, I mean, it's worth noting that, I mean, the economy in Israel was very bad before the events of October the 7th. Obviously, this isn't going to do it any favours. the extent of this, we don't know right now. It's obviously done a huge damage already, and I think there's more coming. I think their economy is doomed beyond belief. There's not going to be much investment. There's going to be no tourism. And no workers, apparently. So I don't know what you do with that. They've never had a normal economy. If they didn't have a sugar daddy like America giving them billions of dollars every year, they wouldn't be able to self-function. And the problem is they've isolated themselves now from the rest of the world. The only people that are supporting Israel are the British and the American governments.
All right, thank you for that. Let me bring in our next guest here. Eamon McKinney joins us. He's an eminent sinologist, Nobel Prize nominee also, and he's written for the Financial Times and The Economist, to name a few. Eamon McKinney, welcome to Economic Divide. The 19.4% fall in the final quarter, the GDP fall, was attributed to the scale of the assault of the genocidal war, and in particular, the impact that it had on the high-tech sector, which contributes to around 17 to 20% of Israel's GDP. But even before this onslaught, our previous guest just mentioned, Israel's economy was not doing that well. There was a drop in investment, and a bulk of the tech workers obviously had to be now reactivated in order to pursue this illegal aggression. Do you think that this sector is going to recoup?
Well, I don't think that the economic problems will make the great difference. There will be enough support from the West, from the United States, if it really comes to a critical situation. It's too early to really evaluate this drop in GDP. I think the main problem in the battlefield will be military and not the economics, because Israel has too many friends and has too many possibilities to resist. It will not be the economics. But, of course, if it takes long time and it will be a distributive problem inside Israel, more people will not defend the Palestinians, but defend another government, which will have another way to deal with the problem.
Time now for the InfoNews section of the program. First up, take a look at the U.S.-EU sanctions leveled against Russia. The two-year special military operation of Russia against Ukraine has arrived, and sanctions were imposed by the U.S. and the EU. In case of the EU, the 13th package of sanctions against Russia, what did it entail? Nearly 200 entities and individuals from Russia were banned from traveling to the EU. Then came in the U.S., the most extensive sanctions, targeting more than 500 people. So much for any improvement in ties between Russia and the EU or the U.S. Next up, poverty in Argentina is what we picked. That rate is at a multiple-year high in January, following the drastic economic reforms that were carried out by the newly installed president, Javier Milei. The share of people in poverty in that country surged to 57.4% in the period last month. That is the highest since the year 2004, and it's up from 44.7% in the third quarter of 2023. The economy of Egypt is our next choice. It's not doing well. Tourism, gas exports, and the Suez Canal revenues, they are all suffering, and the crisis in Rafah could actually make things worse, the crisis that Israel has imposed because of the genocidal war that it's waging against Palestinians. Egypt's economy has suffered from growing public debt, which is at more than 90% of its gross domestic product, and capital flight, and also the currency's fall against the U.S. dollar. And finally, this was a surprise somewhat in terms of the double-digit increase, and it has to deal with Guyana's economy, which recorded a GDP growth of 62.3% for the year 2022, that is. That is the highest in the world, according to the IMF. The 2015 oil discovery made Guyana the world's fastest-growing economy, recording the world's highest real GDP growth rate in 2022 and also for the year 2023. Good for them. Those were the items we picked for this section. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
It's one of the steepest GDP declines for Israel, almost 20%. The immediate question is whether Israel can withstand and to continue its genocidal war. But how did Israel get to this point anyways? Let's take a look at some of the major indicators. First up, let's take a look at one of the most important factors contributing to this, and that is namely what's called private consumption in terms of the contribution it made to the GDP drop. Now, the private consumption has decreased by a figure of 26.9%. Obviously, that's more than a quarter of the consumption that is now not part of the economy there in Israel. That's from the October to December period. As a matter of fact, this was cited as the major contributor to the GDP drop. Next up, we move to another sector. Obviously, they're all important, but this has really contributed to the setback, and that is the area of imports and exports. In terms of imports, goods and services, the decline there was, gosh, that's a lot, negative 42.4%. And when it comes to exports, you see a decline there of negative 18%. All right, so this was impacted significantly due to the actions by the Yemeni army in the Red Sea area in solidarity with the Palestinians in Gaza. So you have to also keep that in mind in terms of how that has impacted imports and exports. Now, the other area that saw a steep contraction was in the investment sector. The impact there is quite high. This obviously impacts the economy in a big way. Is 67.8%. It happened in fixed assets, especially in the residential building area, and obviously residential construction being part of that, which ground to a halt. This amid a shortage of both Israeli and Palestinian workers. Now, we're going to now take a look at one of the consequences, and that's the spending by this cabinet. The spending had to be high, but how high is high? Well, this figure is about to shock you in terms of the time the Operation Al-Aqsa Flood took place. 88.1% are the war costs. I mean, you're talking from reservists to military spending, obviously, to business closures and bankruptcies, unemployment. Well, the list is rather long when it comes to this area in terms of the expenses for the cabinet. Then this is what's said to be the major reason, and that is the cost of the reservists and calling up of these reservists, as well as the lower employee productivity that came as a result of that, which happened in some sectors. When you have 400,000 reservists that were called up, well, the cost came out to roughly $630 million per week. Based on one of the reports, that amounted to $3.6 billion per month. That's the cost just on 1 month that had to deal with the reservists being called up. These are reservists that were also pulled out of the economic cycle. So obviously with that figure, we can see how deep an impact that has had. Let's try to see if our guests can break this down a little bit for us. Let's bring them back. We have first Giorgio Romano, who rejoins us. Giorgio Romano is an associate professor at the International Relations and Economics Federal University, UFABC. Giorgio Romano, welcome back to Economic Divide. Where can I start with you on Israel's economic problems? You got the cost of the war, you got the credit downgrade, you got the lack of workers, and a host of other negative economic indicators, too much to mention in one breath. And, of course, you add to that the Red Sea tensions and the international standing ruined. Does Israel have any hopes of a recovery?
I don't see a way back. I think their economy is destroyed beyond recognition. You're seeing the people of the world are essentially looking at this and saying, how is this allowed to happen? It is the devil now for all to see. So you're seeing massive boycotts of Israeli goods and all kinds of Israeli services. So it's imploding upon itself. The wrath of the world is against Israel for what's going on. And it's disgraceful. But no, I don't see a way back for Israel. I don't see a new normal for Israel, let me put it like that. It's very clear that they're trying to provoke wider wars in the region. And that's just going to lead to more hostility.
Okay, let's find out what our next guest thinks. Eamon McKinney rejoins us. He's a eminent Sinologist and Nobel Prize nominee who has written for the Financial Times and The Economist. Eamon McKinney, welcome back to the program. Our guest there talked about a pretty dark scenario for Israel in terms of recovery, if it can even do that. You have many different negative economic indicators that are impacting Israel's economy. What are the chances of this recovery, and what form do you think it'll take for Israel to actually bounce back? I mean, the groundwork is not there right now as we see it.
Yeah, well, the issue of the migrant workers is, of course, direct and critical, because Israel dependent, paradoxically, on daily cheap labor of the Palestinians, the West Bank and West Crossing, and I think also on Gaza, and for in the construction and service. And what they will do, and what they're already doing, is just change the Palestinian workers for from India, Sri Lanka, whatever. They will look for other countries, Bangladesh, they will look for other countries, because that will create a problem in the, you know, day-to-day economic functioning. They're really dependent on this cheap labor. Once they are substituted, of course, at some point this war will, of course, this phase of the war will end. And you have another problem in the West Bank, but it means that even after that there is some kind of deal, the Palestinian workers will not be allowed to go back again, because they will be substituted. So there will be the structural changes in this, and this increases social problems, unemployment in the West Bank, of course, also.
The construction sector in Israel has suffered from a lack of labor due to military call-ups and a reduction in Palestinian workers. The Israeli military had called up over 300,000 reservists in the days following the October 7th Al-Aqsa flood operation, and the regime immediately barred the entry of at least 170,000 Palestinian laborers, who made up a considerable portion of the construction and agriculture workforce. Regime spending, mainly on the onslaught expenses, and compensation for businesses and households jumped by 88.1%. Despite the sharp drop in GDP between October and December, Israel's economy grew by 2% for the full year. However, it had been expected to expand by 3.5%. The contraction of Israel's economy was much worse than had been expected, and highlights the extent of the hit from the Hamas and the onslaught in Gaza. The regime's growth outlook for 2024 now looks likely to post one of its weakest rates on record. About 20% of the Israeli workforce was missing from the labor market in October, up from 3% before the fighting began. The spike in unemployment reflects the fact that about 900,000 people are now either enlisted in the army, unemployed at home, to have fled from settlements where attacks have been concentrated, or are unable to work due to the destruction of the work industry.
Hello and welcome to the Quick Take section. I'm Matti Apossian. In this section, we will look at the labor force issue in Israel and also inconsistencies in Israel's announcement when it comes to its economy. Initially, about 400,000 Israeli reservists were mobilized to go fight in the Gaza Strip. The number that was reported to be in action, however, was 300,000. Then Israel announced that it was subsidizing the salaries of an average of more than 200,000 reservists. The other burden that Israel has overtaken is the evacuees. 250,000 Israelis, and the Israeli sponsorship of housing was for more than 120,000. These were Israelis evacuated from the northern and southern border areas of occupied Palestine. Then there is the issue of restriction of Palestinian workers from the Israeli workforce. There are inconsistencies in these numbers. One report indicated that 125,000 were restricted, while another said 175,000. But another stat indicated that this crisis had led to the loss of approximately 208,000 jobs. Now, here is the part that gets confusing. We figure it is best to break this down to see how Israel's workforce has been impacted. Here is a breakdown of the labor market numbers. 1,275,000 workers were taken out of a total workforce of around 5 million. This amounts to around 25% of the workforce. The official unemployment rate, 4.58% annually, with a record low of 2.84% in November 2023. There are other factors as well that are inconsistent with the announcements, but what is for sure is how this genocidal war is coming in at a high cost for Israel. That does it for this Quick Take section.
The figures coming out of Israel point to an economy that is trying to survive. All major economic indicators point towards a long road ahead for a possible recovery. The tech sector, Israel's bright spot, well, that has been hit severely from manpower to investment. But like Moody's credit ratings agency indicated, there's a lack of confidence in Israel overall due to an uncertain future, especially with the specter of a war looming over the horizon. That does it for this edition of Economic Divide. Thank you so much for tuning in. From Mikhail Tarwe and the entire team at Economic Divide, it's goodbye until the next program.
The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran while shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents. For humanity.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Salamun alaikum wa rahmatullah. This is Hussein Latifi and you're listening to a program for humanity from IRIB English Radio. In this program, we talk about different dimensions of the human being, definitions, descriptions, and perspectives and reflections about this being in the Holy Quran, and we try to take some lessons, some food for thought from the verses and perspectives and viewpoints manifested and represented in the Holy Quran in this regard. In the previous episode, we were talking about the relationship between the intellect and the Hawa, and we said the base desire, and we said in order to understand the correct meaning of intellect, aql, in the verses of the Holy Quran, we need to understand the opposite concepts, and one of the opposite concepts was Hawa. And we said that sometimes some people follow their own desires, base desires. Sometimes some people might follow the base desires of others. And they might have good intentions in that. For example, some followers of religion, the faithful, they think they have a calculation that if they make a compromise, they follow the desire of others, this is something that I don't desire myself, like, for example, being present in the gathering of sin, for example. But if I follow the desire of others, then it's possible that they will have some inclination toward religion and they may change their mind. As we should and must have decent behavior with others, follow this proper social etiquette and everything else that is represented in the akhlaq, the great manners of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and should not be rude or anything else. At the same time, we are not allowed to make these compromises, to follow the desires of others in order to try to change their opinion. You can, and we should actually, as followers of the religion of Islam, inshallah, we must take example from the behavior of the Prophet ﷺ. He never made any compromise in the matters related to religion, halal and haram, forbidden things, and or for example, or in aqa'id, for example, in the belief system of Islam, for example, the Prophet says, okay, this day we believe, we worship your, for example, deities, and tomorrow you will know. Explicitly in the Holy Quran, it has been rejected. So making compromise is not the correct way to attract people toward the religion. But having nice manners, فَبِمَا رَحْمَةٍ مِّنَ اللَّهِ لِنْتَ لَهُمْ. Quran says, based on the mercy of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, you have a lenient heart toward them. وَلَوْ كُنْتَ فَضًّا غَلْيِذَ الْغَلْبِ. If you had a stoned heart, if you had one solid, hard heart, لَنْفَضُّ مِنْ حَوْلِكَ. People would scatter from around you. That is the correct way to... And some people confuse the two. They think being polite means to lose their own individuality, means to lose their own ground. No, you can have your own ground, have your principle, have your own values, and respect your own values, and at the same time, be polite, at the same time, be lenient toward others, show compassion toward others, show sympathy toward others. And this is a mistake that some people have on the other side as well. They think standing on their ground means to fight always, always being rude in different situations. And I think the example of the Prophet is the best example in this regard, showing us the balanced way in order to invite people towards the right path. We're going to have a break and we come back after the break to continue our discussion.
Dear listeners, you are listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. This is Hossein Latifi, and you're listening to a program for humanity from IRIB English Radio. So in the first segment, we were talking about the verses of the Holy Quran that warns us against following the desires of others. وَأَنَحْكُمْ بَيْنَهُمْ بِمَا أَنزَلَ اللَّهُ وَلَا تَتَّبِعْ أَهْوَاءَهُمْ And do not follow their desires. وَحْذَرْهُمْ أَن يَفْتَنُوكَ عَن بَعْدَ مَا أَنزَلَ اللَّهُ عَلَيْكَ Be careful that they do not take you away from some of the revelations from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. فَأَنْتَ وَلَّوْ فَعَلَمْ أَنَّمَا يُرِدُ اللَّهِ يُنْصِبَهُمْ بِبَعْضِ ذُنُوبِهِمْ You say what you think, what you know that is right. And then if they tawallaw, if they turned away, know that it is because of some of the sins that they have committed before. أَنَّمَا يُرِدُ اللَّهِ يُنْصِبَهُمْ بِبَعْضِ ذُنُوبِهِمْ People losing the chance for guidance is because it's not, nothing is happening out of thin air. Nothing is happening without any reason in this world. If people lose their chance of being present with Prophet ﷺ, this is a great chance. Many of us would long for this situation, to be present with the Prophet, to take direct benefit from him. And then many people existed at the time and they were present with the Prophet, but they wouldn't take any benefit, rather they would reject. So why is that? It is because Quran says some of the sins that they committed made them lose their sight, made them lose the ability to receive the correct message from the Prophet. So, another case for Hawa is when people deviate other people based on their desire. وَمَا لَكُمْ أَلَّا تَأْكُلُوا مِمَّا ذُكْرَ اسْمُ اللَّهِ عَلَيْهِ وَقَدْ فَصَّلَ لَكُمْ مَا حُرَّمَ عَلَيْكُمْ And then the verse goes, says, وَإِنَّ كَثِيرًا لَيَضِلُّونَ بِأَهْوَائِهِمْ بِغَيْرِ عِلْمٍ There are many people who deviate others based on their own desire. The desire for reputation. I have a reputation as a leader of this community. I have a reputation as a scholar. I have a reputation. And then, because of this, I start creating my own version of religion, my own version of things, and fabrication, I start producing fabrication in religion because I like to be famous, I like to be known by everyone. And then this is the base desire. Remember we said this is one of the desires that we share with animals. Also in the animal kingdom you have that the alpha male tries to dominate everyone else and tries to be the head of the society. Hubbul jah, the desire for fame and power and dominance. So because of this, Quran says, وَإِنَّ كَثِيرًا لَيُذِلُّونَ Not only the desire make them go astray themselves, the desire make them to take other people with themselves into deviation. That is a very great sin. وَيَحْمِلُونَ And in the other verse of the أَوْزَارَهُمْ يَحْمِلُونَ أَوْزَارَهُمْ كَامِلَةً يَوْمَ الْقِيَامَةِ وَمِنْ أَوْزَارِ الَّذِينَ يُضِلُّونَهُمْ بِغَيْرِ عِلْمٍ On the day of judgment, they are going to carry their own burden, the burden of their own sin, and also the burden of those whom they have deviated. Why? Because of the desire of the faith, which is one of the strongest desires in human being. Many people let go of other desires and even kill other desires, sexual desires, everything else in order to be famous, in order to be reputable. And we ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to save us from the wrong consequences of these desires. Thank you very much for listening and wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
صلى الله على محمد صلى الله على النبي صلى الله على محمد وعلى آل النبي صلى الله على محمد صلى الله على النبي صلى الله على محمد وعلى آل النبي
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.